remember this old lady that were hunting, they moved from Brooklyn to Florida. They lived there about 50 years, and the old man, Mr. Goldberg, unfortunately passed away, and she wanted to tell the people in Brooklyn that he passed away. So she didn't know how to do it, so somebody said, put an ad in the New York Times. She calls up the New York Times, she said, what is it cost to put in this? Said, one line, $740. Said, okay, she wants everybody to know. She called the New York Times, says, what do you want to write? Just write, Mr. Goldberg died. So the lady says to him, you don't understand, on one line, you can get six words. Says, okay, right, Mr. Goldberg died, Cadillac for sale. I mean, the Florida people don't understand. Anyway, that has nothing to do with my speech. And the next jokes, I'm going to have really nothing to do with my speech. I just, they say that when you get up there, you got to relax the audience. You know what I mean? Like, we relax them. So I'll relax a little bit with the story. This couple, this old Italian man, was married for 50 years. And his priest was very proud of him. 50 years. Giuseppe, you married 50 years? He said, yeah, 50 years. He said, do me a favor. Come to the congregation and you tell them how you do Shalom Bayit. I mean, he didn't use those words. He said, how do you do it 50 years? So he gets up and he says, listen, my friends. He says, listen to boys and girls. It's a very simple thing. Your wife wants to go shopping, you take her shopping. She wants to go to vacation, you take her vacation. She wants to go to a restaurant, you take the restaurant. You know what I did with my wife after 25 years? I took her to Italy. She saw her cousins, she saw her nieces, she saw her nephews, she saw her parents. So one of the kids in the audience says, Giuseppe, and what are you going to do on your 50th anniversary? He said, I'm going to go to Italy and pick her up. That's the Italian version. The Jewish version is the guy at his 50th anniversary says, I'm married 50 years, Baruch Hashem, and it feels like 2 days, Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. I'm sorry, Miriam, where's my wife? It's nothing, I mean, simplest error all the time. So I went to a yeshiva called the Rabbinical College of Tels. Tels Yeshiva in Cleveland. That was, Kinahara, I'm 75, 76, so it must have been about 56 years ago. And I went to Tels Yeshiva. I don't want to say, and people ask me what stopped me from college. I say it's high school. But, you know, that was like the yeshiva where my parents would say to Rebbe, how's your son doing? They would say, outstanding. They meant in the hallways, you know what I mean? I was sitting in a besmedesh when I didn't play basketball, and I was learning this Gemara. And the Gemara is telling us about pidyon shvuyim, releasing somebody that's in prison. A prisoner, release somebody in prison. And the Gemara says, and in Halach it says, in the Jewish law, that you're allowed to sell a Sefer Torah to get somebody out of prison. And I'm sitting here with a fellow Newman, he was my harus, I was 17 at the time. And I said, you know, this is a mitzvah that we never really have a chance to do. It just, you know, it seems like a mitzvah that doesn't fit today in our society. Little did I know that for 25 or 30 years, I would travel the world from Mozambique to Sierra Leone to South Africa, Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Berlin, East Berlin 38 times, Moscow, Leningrad, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Belarus, Peru, Salvador, Argentina, all to help Jews that were in trouble. And I want to take you now on one of my trips. And this is a trip to Vilna, to Lithuania. For a short period of my life, I decided that I have to make a living. I can't be a Rebbe in yeshiva just full time. So I joined a company called Global Technology Group that did business in Lithuania and Russia. And the president of the company, I was vice president, said, we're invited by President Brazauskas, who's the president of Lithuania, to visit the country because Lithuania is now looking for independence from Russia and looking for business people to come into their country and do business. Maybe, you know, he says to me, you know a lot of Jewish people, businessmen, maybe you can go there together with me, I'll see what we can do. I got two phone calls before I left. One was from Telz Yeshiva, Rav Gifter, Oliver Shalom, the Rosh Yeshiva. He says, you know, before we ran away from Lithuania, before the Nazis came in, we took all the Sfarim from the base medrash and we buried them. We buried them in the ground. Maybe you can find out, this is almost 60 years later, maybe you can find out where they are. Another call from Mr. Nushta, and it was from the Soviet Jewry people, the organization that Malcolm Homan used to be the chairman of, and they said, you know, if you go into Lithuania, Vilna, there's a family there called the Reis family, R-A-I-Z. Vladimir is the husband, Carmela is the wife, they have a child, Shaul, and the last child was Moshe. Maybe you can get them out. They're there for 17 years. You did Sharansky, you were able to get Sharansky, he was a refusenik. Maybe you can get the Reis family out. So, I take on a trip, I'm going to do a mitzvah, so hopefully the business will be successful. And I'm going with God, and that's the way I travel all over the world. People ask me, aren't you afraid? You went to these strange places. I went with the Rebbeinu Shlomo. And I meet, first night they put me up, and they pick us up at the airport. They put us in one of the reasonable hotels. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, I call up Reis, Vladimir Reis. I said, Vladimir, this is Ronnie Greenwald for New York. Mrs. Markowitz and Mr. Neustadt from Soviet Jewry told me that I should see you. He says, fine. I'll be across the street from the Vilna Gaon Cemetery, where the Vilna Gaon is buried in Vilna. And I go there and I meet this gentleman and I hug him as a Jew. The only Orthodox Jew left in Vilna. Vilna, which was the city of yeshivas, the cities of tzaddikim, the cities of gadolim. One Orthodox Jew left. His wife traveled hours to the mikveh, and the only Shomer Shabbos in town. And we hugged, and I felt this very strong body, this very strong presence. And he told me for 17 years the KGB does not allow him to leave. He told me they thought he knew secrets, but it's not true. And I said, listen, you know, I had some hatzlacha with Sharansky. Maybe we can do something with you. And I took out the map of Lithuania, and I wrote, number 4, Zerach Barnett, Yerushalayim. And I gave it to him. He says, what's that about? I said, when you get out of Lithuania, get out of Vilna. My daughter lives in Yerushalayim, and that's her address. He took it in his pocket, probably thought I was crazy. That's who he did. Came back to the hotel. My driver, who was also my bodyguard, who was also the agent, the KGB agent, who was with me, was sitting outside the room all night. And the next morning he said to me, who was that gentleman you met at 2 o'clock in the morning? You know, and the Rebbeinu Shlomo was good to me at these moments. And I looked at him and I said, he's a Jew. That was the end of the conversation.
I was a guest of the governor. We were invited to a meeting of 20 ministers. They're not ministers yet, because they're looking for independence. But in their own minds, they have this meeting that when they get independence, one of them will be the Minister of Education, the Minister of Culture, the Minister of Finance. 20 guys around the table in a big restaurant, and I'm sitting with my partner, and naturally everybody is drinking. And one of the gentlemen stands up and says, "I want to make a toast and a question for the Jew from New York." I looked around the table, there's nobody else. And I stood up with my glass, and he looks at me, he says, "Tell us, why is it that the Jewish people survive?" Again, I got a call on powers beyond me, and I tell him, "The Jewish people survive because you can lock them up in prison, but their souls rise above the gates. And you can burn their Torah, their Bible, but the letters float in the air." And so should it be with your people and your constitution. I go home, and before I go home, I meet President Brazauskas. And I say, and he says, "Is there anything we can do for you? You came here to bring us some business people," because I had arranged for Mr. Reichman to come and Gulf Oil and other companies to look at the uranium. And I say to the ambassador, he says, "You know, there's a gentleman in this country who wears one of these. And he has the same eating problem like I have with you. I only eat an apple and some, you know, fruit. And he's here for 17 years with his wife and kids. And I'd like you to help him go to Israel." Then the ambassador, Yaroshevitz, says to me, "Is there anything I can do for you?" I said, "I studied in a yeshiva called Telz." "Oh, Telshai, that's right near Slabodka, which is a couple of miles out of Vilna. What is it?" He said, "Well, about 60 years ago, they buried their books. And if you could find them, that would be wonderful." And I go home. The first call I get, I'm in Poland, and my partner says to me, "Vladimir Reis and Carmela, Vladimir Reis is getting a visa to leave for Israel. In the meantime, they allowed his wife Carmela with Shaul, their son, to visit America with Moshe, because she played in the orchestra. And they let, but they kept Shaul and the husband in Vilna to make sure they came back within the 30-day limit of the visa." And he says to me, "He's free. He's going to be free." I call up Zev Vladimir on the phone. He had a Hebrew name. I said, "Vladimir, you're free." He says, "Well, where are you?" I said, "Go to the agent over here tomorrow," which is the visa place, "and they're going to give you a visa." "They always promise, they never." I said, "Go there tomorrow." I call my wife in America. I said, "Miriam, look for Carmela. Tell Carmela she should go to Israel to meet her husband." And again, she said to my wife, "We've been promised all the time." The fact of the matter is that he picked up his visa. And I called him in Vilna, I said, "Listen, they're closing they're closing down Lithuania. The Russians are surrounding Lithuania. Get out tonight, because tomorrow nobody can leave Lithuania. And we had that information, obviously. And sure enough, he got on the last train. But he says to me, he said, "But my son Shoal, he has 50 is temperatures, 50 degrees, 60 degrees, give me a number." And I didn't know centigrade from whatever. I said, "Oh, that's very low, you know what I mean?" "That's no problem, get on a plane." Said, "But I didn't pack." I said, "Leave your schmatas there, you know what I mean? Just get on the train." And I come from Poland, and Carmela says to Miriam, "But it's all a trick. They're going to kill him. They're going to let him out, and they're going to kill him." I said, "You tell him that Ronnie Grimble is going to protect him in Moscow, you know, the big guy from Muncie, you know, I'm going to protect him against the whole KGB, you know, but I travel with God, you know." We get to Sheremetyevo Airport. He got out of Lithuania, and they're checking his luggage like you never checked anybody before. And how did I get there? Albert Reichman from Toronto, who at that time was listed as the sixth richest family in the world, the Reichman family at that time. I said to Albert, "Remember you promised me once that if I get raised out of Lithuania, you're going to fly in your private plane and pick him up." He said, "Yeah, I did." I said, "Well, he's coming out." Ronnie, I'm in Kew Gardens now. My plane is in London. I said, "Albert." He said, "But I have to say Kaddish." He was never saying Kaddish. I said, "I promise you, I'll get you a minion at the Sheremetyevo Airport." Because when I flew from Poland and I went to Moscow, the yeshiva just opened up. Rabbi Steindl just opened a yeshiva in Moscow. And I went to the yeshiva. But let me tell you what happened at the yeshiva. I'll never forget it. We're sitting in Shabbos and Shul. And they're reading the Haftarah. Something I must admit I don't always listen to. And they're reading the Haftarah and listen to what happens. And it's Parsha Zohar. And Shmuel is very unhappy with Shaul, because Shaul was supposed to wipe out Amalek, and he left some of them alive. And he was very unhappy with him. And listen to what the Pasuk says in Parsha Zohar. Vayashkem Shmuel lekra Shaul. Shmuel came in front of Shaul baboke in the morning. Why? Vayagev leShmuel, because they told Shmuel. Listen to this, everybody. Vayagev leShmuel lema bo Shaul Carmela. Shaul is coming to Carmela. I show it to Vladimir. Look. In the Parsha, Shaul, your son, is coming to Carmela. Vladimir shows it to his kid, Shaul, and says, "It says in the Torah." He's finally believing that he's Hakka being free. He says, "Boy, Shaul, come on." 7 hours later, in Flatbush, New York, Abish Broth is davening in a shul, Parsha Zohar, and he goes to the ladies' section and shows Carmela. The same parsha, Borshaw Carmela. Get to the airport, we're ready to go. And all of a sudden, everybody's getting on a plane. I took some of Vladimir's stuff as pictures, which I put into my suitcase because I figured they wouldn't check me as much, which they didn't. And my visa is missing, and it's a Sunday morning. So Albert Reichman says, "I know the Minister of Finance." He calls up the minister and says, "Sunday, we can't get a visa," he tells Albert Reichman. So I asked one of my friends, who was a general in the Russian army in Lithuania, I did business with him, He had a television factory in Lithuania. His name was Jankauskas. I said, do me a favor, in case there's any problems, Jankauskas, you come to the airport with me. And he comes to the airport. I said, they're not letting me go. And nothing's working. So the plane is ready. Vladimir's ready. Scholl is ready. Albert Reichman's got the pilots ready. And me, the guy that made the deal, can't get on a plane. They're not letting me out of the country. I said, Jankauskas, do what you got to do. So he goes downstairs with five guys that have more medals than, you know, all over the place. And after about a half hour, he comes up the steps and he sees me, he goes. I said, what? He goes. So I figured 5,000, 50,000. I say, Jankauskas, what is that? He says, five television sets. And that's how I got out of Lithuania. Come to the airport and come to the airport in Yerushalayim. It's supposed to be a secret trip because the Arabs were putting pressure on the Russians not to allow any direct flights. This was the first direct flight from Moscow to Israel, the flight that we ran, the small plane. And we wanted to drink a l'chaim, and I remember the pilot says, wait, it was 3 hours into the flight, he says, we're still over Russian territory. That's how big Russia is. We came back to the airport, and I don't know how the word got out, but there are 200-300 Russian Jews dancing and singing and crying, you know, that we brought them back. And they had an apartment for him in Beit Shemesh, Ramot. And before we go to Ramot, he says, takes out a map, says Zeref Barmet 4. He says, we gotta go to Zeref Barmet 4. So I went to my daughter's house, I walked up the steps, and he looks at my daughter and he says, Abba Shalach Hitziloti, your father saved me. And off he went to Ramot, and I went back to America. But it wasn't much after that. I went back to New York and I got a call with the following message. We found your Hebrew books, the ambassador called. I get on a plane the next morning. There's a car waiting for me at the airport. They're driving me through and I'm so excited. I'm going to see the Hebrew books. And they park the car in front of a church, an enormous church. I said, what is this? He says, the Hebrew books? Take me down to the church, down the steps. I walk into the church, and every time, I don't know how it is, I just see the picture again of Sifrei Torah, 40, 50 of them, piled like a heap of garbage, torn, burnt. And that's what I see on the floor of the church. And I say to myself, someday we're going to bury this, give it a proper burial. And then they show us books. I pick a sefer out of the, off the floor. And it says, Misifria, from the library of Rav Elia Meir Bloch, my Rosh Yeshiva, he does. And I was shaking, just holding the sefer. But I made that promise that we're going to do something with it. The battle started, how do you get the Sifrei Torah buried, and how do you get the Hebrew books back? And for a couple of years, I spoke in the parliament in Lithuania, spoke in the books. I wrote letters. I got my son Tanya in Israel to write the halacha because they said, how do you bury things? They're holy, we're not allowed to bury. I showed them how Sifrei Torah, the mitzvah, is to bury them. And they finally agreed. They called it the Grünwaldes law that they were allowed to bury some Sifrei Torah. And I went with a group of rabbis and we went back to Vilna. and it was the yard site, the 200 yard site of Villa Gone. And we were going to bury the Secretary. We came into the Minister of Culture and had a box prepared with some of the Secretary. And we opened the box. And let me tell you what occurred. Everybody said, my dear friends, we opened up the box of the burned Sifrei Torah, and the first parchment that we witnessed was a black wall around from fire and a couple letters left on the page that says, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, and God said to Moses, saying, Nikom Nikmas B'nai Yisrael, take vengeance for the Jewish people. I turned around to my friends and we shook. What a vengeance. Here we are, from Muncie, from Brooklyn, from Boston, from Lakewood, and we're doing a mitzvah. We're burying the Sifrei Torah. What's a bigger vengeance than that? They thought they wiped us out. They thought they wiped out the Torah. They thought they wiped out the Jewish people. Here we are. And I ordered a hearse. And I took the 14, 15 old people from the shul. And we walked behind the hearse. And we cried like babies. We said a Kaddish. We said a Kel Molay. Just like a person. And right across from the Vilna Gaon's grave and Rav Chaim Oiza nearby, we dug a pit. And we put the Sifrei Torah into the ground. And here's what I said to the old Jewish people that were there that spoke Yiddish, but I'll say it in English. I said, Rabbi Yisai, they think that they buried the Jewish people. They think that Ponevich, Telz, Mir, Slabotka, Kletz, Nevadik, Volozhin, they thought they wiped out those yeshivas. But every one of those yeshivas exists in Israel or in America. They didn't wipe out Torah in the world. And Rabbi Yisai, we're burying the Sifrei Torah, but remember, Oisiyais, Parashas Ve'avo, the letters are floating in the air, and these letters are going to Johannesburg, they're going to Canada, they're going to Lakewood, they're going to Quebec, they're going to Brooklyn, they're going to Memphis, and they're here in Stamford, Connecticut with Eish HaTorah. Thank you very much.
Okay, we have a few minutes. We're going to take questions and answers for Rabbi Greenwald. If I ask everyone to please sit down, we're going to take questions and answers on anything. Please, Mr. Markman, if everybody could please sit down and respect the questions.
I'll repeat it for the people. No, he wants to know about the Sharansky. The Sharansky speech is about 40 minutes. Basically, it was like a chess game because we always had to put up players. In fact, I flew to South Africa to get Mandela out for Sharansky. I mean, I was in Mozambique to try and do Russian trades. Now, what we do is we take Russian spies and we trade them for Western spies. So with Sharansky, we put together five East Germans, Russian spies from East Germany and Poland, with four Westerners that were in different prisons in Russia. We did a swap of five for four. And I remember staying in the house when Sharansky was going across the Glinicky Bridge. So it was a question of me coming out to the bridge. And Bert, who was the ambassador, said, no, I don't want the rabbi there. You know, it's a political reason. I don't need the rabbi there. But I was sitting in my house, and I said to Miriam, right now, Sharansky is crossing the bridge into freedom. And I kind of promised you that, after I do Sharansky, I won't travel that much. And she looked at me, she said, until the next one. And I think she was right.
Yes.
Can you tell us about the three yeshiva bachurim that are imprisoned in Japan?
I'll tell it to you quickly, as much as, you know, can be said. You know, he wants to know about the three boys in Japan, the three yeshiva. Well, one of them already was more or less given a sentence of 6 years. He's already served two or three. The deal is that they will extradite him to Israel, which doesn't mean he's free at all. He has to be in a prison. The other one is in the third week of the trial for the second one, and the next one is going to be next month. And I know everybody wants to know, did they do anything wrong? That I don't get into that stuff. If they smuggled, they didn't smuggle, it's not. The issue is that, is it pigeon shvuyim? I would say it's pigeon shvuyim. I get the question a lot of times when a kid is in jail for drugs, and they tell me it's pigeon shvuyim. That's when I have to ask questions to rabbis. What is pigeon shvuyim?
What is pigeon shvuyim?
Pigeon shvuyim is releasing people that are in prison, helping people that. Usually the cases I get involved in are political prisoners because they're Jewish. I mean, Sharansky was in there because he was Jewish. Vladimir Reyes was in there, the kid in Salvador. But I even went for Laurie Berenson. Does anybody know the name Laurie Berenson, who was in Peru? But she ended up marrying a terrorist, so I kind of backed off. But I was in Peru three or four times because she was a Jewish girl. And she was a political prisoner, but whatever. Yeah.
We'll take one more question. Dr. Coopersmith.
Anything did you say about Pollard?
I always get that. So about Jonathan Pollard. I really did think that by now he would have been free. There's something illogical about holding him so long. But the basic answer is the Pentagon, the State Department, the DI, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the CIA, the Central Defense. There's no support for Pollard at all because these organizations are not, I can't publicly call anybody, you know, anti-Semitic. It's not proper for me to do that. But I think they're not friendly about Israel, about Jews. I'll tell you quickly, I was in Israel about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, because I had a prisoner swap for Jonathan Pollard. We had a CIA guy in Russia called Top Hat. His name was Top Hat, and he was in Russia. And then, in Israel, there were two spies. Shaftai Kalmanowitz, who I traveled with around the world, ended up being a Russian spy and just got shot 2 weeks ago dead in the streets in Russia. So Shaftai was my buddy traveling around, so he was in a prison, and there was another guy, a chemical engineer. So I wanted to do a three-way swap. And when I went to Israel, spoke to Shamir's guy about it, they said, the relationship with Russia is now getting a little better. We can do it ourselves. I think it was a mistake on their part, because I think at that time. But I was hoping that we can do Barghouti. You know, Barghouti, but I'm afraid they may give him away for Shalit. I don't know. Because the Shalit thing is coming up now again. It's going to happen. Shalit will be free. The question is how many people we give him. It's going to be over 400. The question is if they're going to give Barghouti in the package. Anyway, a good Shabbos, and thanks for listening.
If I can ask, okay, if everyone can please take their seats.